so beautifully. Well, I have to tell you, as a preacher at this time of year, it's pretty easy and very tempting not to preach this text that we have in front of us today, Matthew 2:13 through 23. It's about Joseph, Mary, and Jesus fleeing to Egypt for safety, and then the atrocities of King Herod. It's pretty easy and very tempting not to preach this, because we're still in the days of Christmas. In that afterglow, a lot of decorations are still up. And while Christmas trees may not have presents, unopened presents under them, many of us still light the Christmas tree and enjoy the warmth of that light. We're also in that in-between time between Christmas and New Year's. Students aren't back at school yet. A lot of people are still off of work. Some are on the road. Some are at the beach. Some of us are here dealing with ice. And it's nice to let this celebration continue, to linger in this. It's also nice to hold in mind the quiet sacredness of Jesus' birth. After the angels sang and the shepherds came and the magi brought their gifts, to hold in mind this young family, this newborn baby, in this quiet setting that we imagine one way or another, even if just from Christmas card pictures. So it's tempting to hold on to the sweetness and the quiet of what we might imagine, and then in our mind's eye, just to allow the transition of Jesus and family back to Nazareth and to their quiet life up there as Jesus learned the carpentry trade before he began public ministry years later. Sort of a gentle story to hold in mind. But that's not the story. It's not the whole story. That skips over this part, which I said is tempting not to preach, not even to think about or read. But this passage that we'll look at today is a really important part of the whole story, painful as it is. We heard the context. Bruce read it a few minutes ago from the first part of Matthew 2, that the Magi came to worship this newborn king named Jesus. They came from far off in the east, from somewhere in Persia, maybe from the same region where the people of Israel had been held in captivity, where generations earlier they had been released. It could be that when the people of Israel were released from captivity, that they left behind some of their sacred scrolls, and the Magi, being Zoroastrian, a religion that tracked the movement of stars and the interpretation of star patterns, it could be that they used these scrolls, like the prophecy we heard embedded in the text from Malachi. "But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Combining Malachi's prophecy and the movement of a massively bright star, and the Magi's religion based on interpretation of star movements, and all of it mixed together with the power of God at work, the Magi set out and followed the light of the star about 1,000 miles east to Bethlehem in the land of Judah to give praise to and to worship this newborn ruler, shepherd, king who had just been born. And they brought with them gifts fitting for a king: gold, frankincense, and myrrh, precious gifts carried over about 1,000 miles of desert. But then there's this plot twist with Herod, the notorious King Herod. He was a truly evil character. I won't go into detail, but his years of power were filled with paranoia and murder. There have been a lot of Herods in this world. There still are. When the Magi told him why they were in town to worship a newborn king, Herod, as we heard, he pretended to be full of admiration and adoration, asked them to tell him where this child was so that he too could go and worship. But then God interrupted with a dream, routing the Magi out a back way from Bethlehem, away from Herod's scheming. And this infuriated Herod, As an autocrat, a tyrannical dictator who had a long history of deadly paybacks, Herod was furious. We can read it in verse 16. When Herod realized he'd been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious. And that word outwitted, it can also be translated as ridiculed, and it comes from a word that actually means doing a sort of mocking dance around somebody. Now, there's no indication in the text that the Magi did this sort of mocking dance, but that must be how Herod interpreted their outwitting of him. And in his fury, feeling ridiculed, things took a deadly, horrific turn. So let's hear the text. Beginning in Matthew 2, verse 13. When the Magi had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. "Get up," he said, "take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him." So he got up, took the child and his mother during the night, and left for Egypt, where they stayed until the death of Herod. And so was fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I called my son." When Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious and gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he learned from the Magi. Then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. "A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because they are no more." After Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother and go to the land of Israel, for those who are trying to take the child's life are dead." So he got up, took the child and his mother and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning in Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. Having been warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee, and he went and lived in a town called Nazareth. So was fulfilled what was said through the prophets, "He will be called a Nazarene." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. What an upended beginning of life for Jesus. We don't know exactly how old he was when the Magi came and when Herod got enraged and this horror happened in Bethlehem. We don't know his exact age, but we do know that Mary and Joseph, enough time had gone by that they'd found alternative lodging from a cattle shed. Verse 11, it reads, Matthew 2, 11, it reads that the Magi came to the house where they were. To the house, probably a rented room in a house. We can also infer from what we just read that considering Herod's order to target all boys under the age of 2, Jesus was somewhere up to that age. So probably not just a week or 10 days old, but we don't know the exact age. So imagine how frightening this had to be for Mary and Joseph. Terrifying. They were young people from a little village. And here they were, far away from home, far away from anyone they knew, living in temporary housing in Bethlehem, on the edge of a very noisy, busy, cosmopolitan place like Jerusalem, filled with Roman soldiers and ruled by this madman king. And they were taking care of a baby and all that goes with that. Plus, they needed to find better shelter, which they did, plus food and everything else they needed to live. It had to be so frightening and so unsettling in so many ways. And then Joseph had this other dream, another dream with an angel in it. But in this dream, there was urgency. They were in extreme danger. The angel said, "Joseph, get up. Get up, take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt and stay there until I tell you, because Herod is going to search for your son to try to kill him." And in the middle of the night, they packed up and left and traveled south and west toward Egypt, which was some 400 to 600 miles away, depending on where they settled. Now, let's say they had 400 miles to go, 400 miles by foot. If they went 10 miles per day, every day, day after day, that'd be 40 days. But this was with a baby. And this was through desert. So maybe it was 5 miles per day. So 80 days. We don't know. What we do know is that they were fleeing from one country to another. They were seeking refuge in a land unknown to them, Egypt, and leaving behind a land very known to them, their land of birth and heritage and family. They were leaving for only God knew how long. And it was all because of an autocrat whose pride had been bruised and who went on a murderous binge to prove that he had power and control. They were refugees seeking safety. What an upended beginning of life for Jesus. And what an upended beginning of life, family life, for Mary and Joseph together with Jesus as refugees, not knowing when they would go home. The only word they had was what the angel told Joseph in a dream: stay there until I tell you. Dot, dot, dot. How long? They didn't know. As I was initially working on this sermon, I kept thinking about how fearful all of this must have been. It had to be terribly fearful, frightening, uncertain, unsettling, upending, leaving in the night under the threat of death, crossing a hostile landscape, going to a country where they didn't know anyone and where everything was foreign, and doing all of this with a baby. With a baby. All because of Herod. Sadly, we know that this is the plight of millions of people today. An unthinkably large number of people. One of the figures I've read is that 70.8 million people right now are living as refugees, meaning that they've left their home countries because of life-threatening circumstances, whether it's political or economic or war or famine or other conditions that make life desperately dangerous. 70.8 million people today. It's a hard number to absorb. Another hard number to absorb is that 37,000 people are forced to leave their homes every day. Day by day by day. 37,000. It's an overwhelming amount of people. So many painful and frightening situations and stories that it's hard to grasp and absorb all of this. 70.8 million people as refugees, 37,000 leaving every day. But that's how things are. Many are fleeing Herod-like autocrats. Part of what Sid and I are planning to do on this sabbatical leave beginning in May is to listen and to learn, and when it's appropriate, to record stories of refugees, these very people today, people uprooted by terribly frightening things. That's why our sabbatical plan includes going to Malta and then to Rome, where there are so many North African refugees, and then up to Malmo, Sweden, where there are Syrian refugees who are pouring in, and where our friends Barb and Steve Swanson and Eric and Bethany Abramson are working with refugees, although the Abramsons will be stateside then, so they'll be here on one of those Sundays we're gone. Yet we also have people, displaced people living locally among us, including those who were living in the now burned out Drake Hotel downtown Minneapolis and have found shelter in other places, including, among other places, First Covenant Church Minneapolis and Bethlehem Baptist, thanks be to God. And we have refugees and immigrants trying to make their way among us, looking for safety and hope and a way to live. And then add to this all those who are figuratively displaced, not sure where they belong, or if they are safe. Are they safe here among us? Refugees and displacement is a global story that we all need to understand, life by life, story by story. And it's important for all of us who have not been uprooted, who have not had to flee our homes and our country. It's important for us to know and to let our hearts be moved by those who have, by the realities of all this. And to remember that this is how Jesus' life began. Uprooted under threat, displaced as a refugee. So getting back to Mary, Joseph, and Jesus, as I said a few moments ago, as I was initially working on this sermon, I kept thinking about how fearful all of this was. Terribly frightening, I'm sure. Uprooting, unsettling. But then I began thinking that while fear had to be powerfully present, it was not fear without hope. It wasn't fear without hope. It was not fear out of having been abandoned. Because remember those critically important words that the angel said to Mary and then to Joseph as the whole story of their life with Jesus began. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. And then those words of Mary that run so deep and that continue to echo through the ages, where Mary said, "May it be to me according to your word." Do not be afraid. May it be to me according to your word. Words of deep, deep faith and such strong assurance in the midst of frightening, uncertain, uprooting things. God was with them. And they had to know it, because their responses and their actions show it. Their son was named Jesus, as they had been told to name him, meaning God saves. He was also called Emmanuel, fitting with an ancient prophecy, Emmanuel meaning God is with us. And God had been so intimately involved with them in amazing ways, speaking through an angel about Mary's conception, and then Jesus' birth, or their marriage, and then his birth, and then a whole sky full of angels, and shepherds seeing angels. Then the Magi coming from 1,000 miles away to worship this king. Then God speaking to Joseph saying, "You need to leave." God had spoken and shaped and guided them at each step of the way, and they responded in faith. That included this uprooting step of leaving for Egypt and then waiting for God to say when they could come back. They went in trust, their lives in God's hands, again and again and again, continually. Being common, ordinary people in frighteningly uncertain times, fear had to have been there, of course. But it seems that what ran deepest in them was trust and faith. Trust and faith. They must have been fully convinced that God was, in fact, with them in this. That God had not abandoned them, but that God was intimately involved in all of it, in their actions, leaving Egypt and then returning to Israel. Their actions reflected their faith. In contrast, Herod's actions reflected deep fear, right? A different kind of fear. He was so threatened and fearful about keeping his power that he had babies killed in order to keep it. In a book by Frederick Buechner, he wrote, "Herod was fit to be tied when he realized that he had been had and ordered the murder of every male child 2 years old and under in the district. For all his enormous power, he knew there was somebody in diapers more powerful still. For all of his enormous power, he knew that there was somebody in diapers more powerful still. And here's who that one more powerful still was and is." The Apostle Paul wrote this. "He is the Son who is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all of creation. For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. All things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together." From Colossians 1. Herod must have had terrible fear. Fear that came out in loathing and cruelty. In ordering horrific things to be done like what his soldiers did in Bethlehem. But Herod, like all rulers, as much power as he had and as cruel damage as he did, his power was only on the stage for a short while and then it was gone. Whereas this little baby he tried to have killed, he remains. Jesus remains. His reign continues. His kingdom is without an end. And he continues to bring life rather than death, hope rather than fear, unlike the Herods of this world. There have been and there are so many Herods in this world coming in all kinds of guises, and there is so much fear in this world, so many fearful things happening every day. And it can be very easy to get into the fear of all of it, to be swept up in the currents of fear and all the dark places that that can take us. But this word remains. The word given to Mary and then to Joseph and to so many others, do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. It's a word given to us too. The question is, do we receive that? Do we hear it and do we trust it? Do not be afraid. The one whose earthly life began in the most impoverished of places, in a cattle stall outside. The one who was soon carried off in his mother's arms to Egypt because he was under threat of death. The one whose first few years of life was lived as a refugee in a foreign land, all because of Herod. He is the one who continues to say, I am with you. Come to me. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened. We can also accurately say, come to me, all you who are afraid of whatever it might be, and I will give you rest. I am with you always to the very end of time, he says. Do not be afraid. So that's a word for all of us. Do not be afraid. For those of us who receive it, it carries hope. It brings life, it brings freedom. Do not be afraid, I am with you. No matter what, I am with you. And this is something that we can then bring out into the world with us day by day by day. Out where there are so many fearful and frightening things happening and so many people who are displaced, globally, locally, literally displaced as refugees, or figuratively displaced as not knowing if they are safe, if they have a place. So may people find in us hope and life and freedom and welcome. And as people of Jesus Christ, may they see him alive and active in us, his love coming out through us. Let's pray. Oh, Lord Jesus, help us day by day to live first and foremost as your people. As people who take our lead from you and from your word and from the truth of your kingdom. In this world that has such widespread combinations of good news and bad news, of light and dark, keep us in the light. Keep us as people of your light. Bearing your presence and your love even when there are powerful currents drawing us other ways. With a story of how your life began being so fresh in mind, from the manger scene and angels to your flight as a refugee and angels again. We're reminded how deeply and truly you know life in this world, that you know the workings of human hearts, and yet you continue to speak into it, bringing hope, bringing love, bringing grace. Draw our lives to you continually and completely, and use us to share your love, your truth, your good news in every possible way. We offer ourselves to you, asking all of this in your holy name, Jesus Emmanuel.